Hello and welcome to Stories from a Small Blue Marble. My name is Brian Hancock and I'll be your storyteller. Before we get started, I wanted to thank you for listening. These stories are my life in small bite-sized chunks. I have had an incredibly charmed life and I'm happy that you're here with me to enjoy some of it. So let's get started. This story is called Racing to Down Under. It's about racing from England to Australia. The news about the Fastnet race and all the death and destruction that had happened that long night hung over the sailing community for the rest of the summer. Battlecraft finally returned to Cowes and we started to prepare the boat for another transatlantic trip back to Antigua. I was sitting on the foredeck with my sewing machine repairing something, I can't remember what it was, when I saw a tall guy with a big mustache stop by to talk to Terry Gould, the captain of Battlecry. Terry pointed my way and a tall stranger came over. He said, "My name's Skip Novak. I'm skipping a boat in the Parmelia race that leaves from Plymouth next month. We'll stop in South Africa and the race finishes in Fremantle in Australia. I need a sailmaker. Are you interested?" I was looking forward to sailing back to Antigua and Battlecry. So I asked the guy, "What's the deal?" Skip replied, "There is no deal. You sail with us, we provide food, you get to have an adventure." I looked at him and said, "I'm in." That's how things were done back then. No pain or prospects and the promise of a big challenge and an adventure of a lifetime. I wrote a poem, which you can find in my book of poetry. The poem is called, "I See Things Float By on the Breeze." It sums up in a few short sentences how I have come to live my life. I see things float by on the breeze and I catch them. I caught that one that Skip had dangled in front of me and it led to numerous circumnavigations and a firm friendship with one of sailing's most successful high latitude skippers. Skip and I have sailed well over 60,000 miles together. I joined Independent Endeavour in Plymouth. It was a Swan 65. The boat had been bought by an Australian businessman and he was looking for a cheap way to get it delivered to Australia. Peter Wright was one of Australia's richest men. He and his partner Lang Hancock, no relative unfortunately, had discovered gold in Western Australia and made a fortune. Peter owned a newspaper called the Sunday Independent, hence the name of the boat. He may have been rich, but he was cheap and a total prick. The race, called the Parmelia Race, was to celebrate the discovery of Western Australia 150 years earlier by the ship Parmelia. It was a pursuit race, meaning that each boat had a different start date based on the boat's handicap. Since we were one of the bigger boats, we were one of the last to leave England. We were required to stay in Cape Town for a certain amount of time before sailing to Australia with the same staggered start. We took off from Plymouth at the end of September. There were 10 of us on board. We had a cantankerous cook who went by the name Dollar. May he rest in peace. He was really a miserable twat. The crew were a mix of Aussies and Americans. Most of them went on to fame and hopefully some fortune. Skippy Lissaman was a young Aussie. When we arrived in Fremantle, he was immediately recruited to sail on Australia 2 in the America's Cup. Skippy was the starboard headsail trimmer on the boat when they won race 7 against Dennis Connor aboard Liberty and won the America's Cup, finally breaking sport's longest winning streak. There was also Steve Harrison, who ran a successful rigging business and worked on all the Aussie America's Cup campaigns. And then there was Jerry Downton, aka Captain Tits. Jerry was and is still one of the most colourful characters on the international sailing circuit. He was my best man at my wedding. By the way, in my novel, Murder at Your Convenience, there was a bartender at the famous Southport Royal Bar in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. That bartender is based on Captain Tits. So we took off for Cape Town. A couple of funny stories along the way. The boys had all given up smoking. Not me, I never smoked. But it seemed like a good idea at the time, but a week into the race they were struggling. We saw a passing ship and Skip got them on the VHF radio and asked them if they could spare some smokes, which they did. They dropped a few cartons off and we sailed by and picked them up. A week later we did the same thing and we asked the ship for beer and the captain kindly obliged. He wrapped a few cold cases of beer in a net and dropped it overboard. We scooped it up. There was a message wishing us luck from the captain and crew of the ship World Navigator. In my novel Cinnamon Girl, I named the ship that runs over my main character's boat in the middle of the night. I named it World Navigator. Anyway, we tried a third time. This time, when we saw a passing ship, we explained who we were and asked if they had any ice cream on board. Our request was met with a stony silence, and that put an end to those fun games. We had to wait until Cape Town to get ice cream and beer and cigarettes. We were in good shape when we got to South Africa. I think that we were in second or third place, but we still had a long, rough Southern Ocean leg ahead of us. The race favorite from the outset was a boat by the name of Cisco. It was owned and skippered by one of Australia's top sailors, a man by the name of Roddy Tasker. Cisco was bright red and brand new and beautiful. They started behind us. I think that they gave us 2 or 3 days head start. This was my first Southern Ocean experience. We sailed deep into iceberg territory and dealt with gale force winds and huge seas in the roaring 40s. Of course, I loved every minute of it. I would be on the foredeck changing sails. The head sails back then were hanked on, and the wind would be howling. Sometimes we would see the southern lights swirling overhead. The boat was sailing on the edge of control, and I thought to myself that I must be the luckiest person alive. We passed all the boats that had started before us, and only had Cisco to deal with. They were closing in fast from behind, but they ran out of race course, and we were first into Fremantle, beating Cisco by less than 2 hours. Roddy Tasker was sour about it, and he told the press that we must have cheated. We didn't cheat. We were just dumb and fearless, and we won fair and square. Funny story. It was all over the press that we were going to win, and Peter Wright told Skip that we had to look our best. He was such a cheap bastard that he hadn't even bought us t-shirts. Skip looked at me, and I knew what he was thinking. We had blown out our red and orange spinnaker a few days earlier. I got to work and made red sarongs and yellow headbands for the crew. We rolled into Fremantle just as the sun was setting, bringing with us a westerly gale, which we carried all the way across the finish line. There were tons of spectator boats, and we were a wide-looking bunch in our brand new crew gear. The press were all over it, and Peter Wright was impressed with the crew uniforms until he realized that I'd cut up his $6,000 spinnaker to make the uniforms. Well, we were well and truly famous for a few weeks. It seemed like the whole of Australia had been following the race. This story gets even better. As part of the same race, there was a cruising division. Those boats had to choose their own start date and time. They had to stay a minimum of a week in Cape Town, and they had to arrive at 11 a.m. on Saturday, November 25th. I think that was supposed to be the date and time that the ship Parmelia arrived in Western Australia. But when I looked on Wikipedia, it was a different day. But anyway, the boat that crossed the finish line closest to the exact time would win a big prize. I can't remember how much money, but it was a decent chunk of change. Of course, it's easier to blow off time than it is to make it up. So most of the cruising boats got to Fremantle early and just waited for the Saturday morning to cross the finish line. Well, there was this French boat in the cruising division. I can't remember its name. But they arrived early and decided to while away their last night at sea by depleting their wine reserves. They went back and forth about 20 miles offshore, but with the wine flowing and no one paying attention, they ran aground in the middle of the night. There was an island off the coast of Western Australia called Rottnest Island. They hit it so hard that the crew were able to step off the boat onto dry land, and they never recovered the boat. Meanwhile, 5 other boats sailed into Fremantle Harbour, all finishing within minutes of the 11 o'clock deadline. The race officials decided to award them all the prize money, which they split 6 ways to include the poor French team who had taken a ferry the last 20 miles. It was a great adventure. I found myself in Australia in midsummer. I remember reading The Thorn Birds by Colleen McCulloch and falling in love with the country, but I was broke. No money, no prospects. But as you will soon find out, I did just fine. Well, I hope you enjoy the story, and as always, thank you for listening. For all of my books, please go to www.brianhancockbooks.org. It's .org, not .com. There you'll find all of my books, my Substack blogs, stories, and very soon my podcasts. There'll be interviews with sailing legends, and I think you'll enjoy all the content. So please check in and say hello. And thanks, as always, for listening.